Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for Debtwire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Hawaiian Electric's Uncertain Future. Joining me today to discuss Hawaiian Electric is John Sinna, who's a credit analyst for our sister publication, Debtwire North America, and who last week published a report for Debtwire called Hawaiian Electric Industries Incorporated, Massive Uncertainties Abound in the Wake of the Maui Wildfire, 2Q23 credit report. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, John, today we're going to discuss Hawaiian Electric Industries, and we'll probably be referring to it as Hawaiian Electric throughout the podcast. Going back approximately a little bit more than a month ago, there were wildfires in Maui that ravaged the island, and more specifically, Lahaina, a town on the northwest coast of Maui. And Hawaiian Electric's role is that they're seen as the main reason why these wildfires caused so much damage in terms of concerns about mismanagement that took place at Hawaiian Electric. Things have gotten to the point where there's going to be a congressional committee hearing by the House Energy and Commerce Committee on September 28th to talk to Hawaiian Electric executives and Hawaii regulatory officials about what happened on August 8th. I just want to give some context for people. This is what we would call in the Muni world corporate tax exempt. So although it's a corporate credit, they have about $542 million in Muni bonds across five issuances from the Department of Budget and Finance of the state of Hawaii. And this comprises about 38% of their secured debt. And they have about $3.1 million in net debt. So I just wanted to give that background. John, maybe for a minute, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. Thanks, Paul. So quickly, I've been in financial services for, this is really sad to say, this dates me, like 25 years. You know, so I started when I was three, clearly. But I've done everything from, sorry, corny joke, but everything from investment banking. And then most recently, over the past 15, 20 years, I've been on the buy side in various roles. So I've worked for some large institutional hedge funds, trading both equity and credit. So I think, you know, highlight is I've done a lot of things in the research land. And most recently in my career, it's been focused on credit, distressed credit, you know, situations that are complex. You know, usually when there's some sort of event, it's something that I'm naturally drawn to. My curiosity lives there. Hawaiian Electric is a great example of a situation like that where, you know, there's clearly a lot going on here, as you point out in your introduction.
Can you provide us an overview of Hawaiian Electric's business?
Yeah, happy to do so. And I'll predicate it with, I think everyone has a view or an understanding of the utility side of the business. If you've looked at any of the reports that have come out or any of the news stories, I think it's obvious that there's that side of the business. So we'll go through that a little bit first. But there are a couple of other pieces too, and we'll get to it later on today about why those are important. So first, the utility. Hawaiian Electric Company or Electric Industries has first HECO, H-E-C-O. So you'll see these acronyms that are out there. I'll put them out there just so we're speaking the same language. A Hawaiian Electric Company. They service the island of Oahu. That entity has two operating subsidiaries, Hawaiian Electric Light Company, H-E-L-C-O, which services the island of Hawaii, and then Maui Electric Company, M-E-C-O, which services Maui, Lanai, and Molokai. They touch about 95% of the consumers in Hawaii in terms of servicing essential needs for power. And you'll notice that Kauai is not on that list. So that's the only island that they don't service. So you can think about it as a regulated monopoly and kind of the service provider if you're buying electricity on the island. Importantly, so I touched on that. It is a regulated monopoly, and you touched on this too earlier, Paul. There's a Public Utility Commission which regulates Hawaiian Electric. So the best way to think about that is it's a panel of, you know, government body, in essence. And what that does is it restricts Hawaiian Electric from unilaterally making decisions like price increases, like taking on more debt. And you know, many of you listeners might have that construct. I do where I live. You know, for instance, if my local power company wants to build a new plant, or, you know, the price of coal, for instance, we burn coal here, unfortunately, it goes up a lot. They can't just stick you like a 35% rate increase and say, hey, you know, that's the biz, man. So it allows risk to sort of be shared from a financial standpoint. So while it is a monopoly, you know, there's this regulatory body which sits in between the consumers and this monopoly to try to provide a little bit of, I don't know, comfort, if you will. So that's important. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Again, more technical bits. So there's five electrical grids. Stands to reason, each island is its own grid. You know, it's not like the continental United States where you have, you know, all the sort of interconnectedness. So each of the islands kind of stands on its own. We highlight this in the report, and I think it's an interesting one. I was a little bit fascinated when I read this, just sort of given my perception of what's going on in Hawaii. But most of the generating facilities burn some sort of carbon. A lot of what we do power-wise in the world is carbon-based. I guess I was a little surprised given my view of Hawaii as being, you know, really green, you know, literally green, but also, you know, focused on climate change. You can flip through the report. We've got it pasted, I think, on page 2. But you can see a lot of the facilities are burning things like diesel or fuel oil. And again, it's an island, so this is not cheap to transport, right? You're putting it on ships. There's not a pipeline. You know, you're not really drilling for diesel in Hawaii, for instance. So that's just something to keep in mind, too. I guess related to that, there is a push for green, and this relates to the utility segment. Hawaiian Electric hasn't built a lot of its own facilities. So if you think about solar, you think about wind, you think about anything else that's tagged green, geothermal would be really interesting, given the volcanic activity. Hawaiian Electric has partnered with independent power producers. So the acronym there is IPP. So an IPP is, you know, Paul, you could decide that, hey, I want to go into the power business. I'm going to build this project. I want to build a solar farm. You would go to Hawaiian Electric, for instance, and say, hey, you know, I'm going to have, I don't know, make it up, you know, 10 units of power, whatever that is. Would you buy that from me? And they, granted, you'd have to do a negotiation, but they'd say, yeah, okay, cool. Here's a contract for 10 to 15 years. Here's some pricing. Paul, you would then take that contract into the market and go get funding from any one of the various parties that funds green projects. So kind of by a derivative, you know, they're promoting green power, but not in like a direct way. So they're allowing these facilities to be financed and built because they're buying power. So if you look through the report, you know, we mentioned that a little bit, but if you dig into the financials, they've got a list of all these different facilities they support. And then finally, again, just sort of speaking to the size of this segment, it's about 90% of the revenue. So if you think about Hawaiian Electric and you're like, hey, it's a utility, you're right, but that segment is the biggest piece. So that's kind of the review of the utility piece for our purposes today.
So I appreciate that comprehensive background so we can all be speaking the same language. Now, what I found interesting in reading your report, because when I think about utilities, I don't necessarily think about banks. So can you explain this whole thing about the Hawaiian Electric? They own a bank? Is that correct?
You know, you're right. And it's funny you mentioned that when, you know, when this topic came up and the gentleman who I work with says, hey, would you mind writing up on this? So, you know, dig into the 10K. And I started flipping pages quickly. I'm like, oh, it's just a utility. And I'm like, you know, the word bank like hit my periphery somehow. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is strange. So you're right. You're right. Most people don't think about a utility owning a bank. So this is a unique one in the sense that they do. And the background there, and I guess taking a step back, the bank is American Savings Bank, and we'll call it ASB for short. And it's not small. It's about a $10 billion bank. In the world of banks, is actually pretty small, but you know, it's not like, you know, one branch bank down the street. Hawaiian Electric bought this bank in 1988. And, you know, given that I'm 100 years old, I remember this time very well. But during the 80s, if you recall, you know, the strategic push from everyone was diversification. And everyone's going to be a conglomerate. You know, no one is going to be one thing. We were all going to be all these things, you know, which topic for another time, that led to all the great PE, you know, spinoffs 20 years later. But Hawaiian Electric is part of this in the 80s, bought a bank, and they've had it ever since. You know, the first thing people see right now when they see, oh, wow, bank, you know, you think about all the malaise we've had with, you know, all the Silicon Valleys and Silvergates and stuff like that. My analysis suggests that this one is pretty sleepy. I don't mean that in a mean way, but it's just sort of like what you might consider a bank before all those things kind of came up. So it provides mortgages to people, provides commercial loans to people. They got a bunch of branches, a bunch of ATMs. If you look at the loan book, about 83% of that book is tied to real estate, and the majority of that is residential. So it's just kind of doing the things that, like, you know, a bank would do. They just think it in normal course. Credit quality looks really high. If you look at charge-offs, delinquencies are very, very low. It doesn't seem like there's any shenanigans going on there. It just seems like it's sort of a simple, you know, simple bank model, which makes sense. Important to remember here. So we talked about the utility company being regulated. Banks, of course, are also regulated. So the bodies that oversee ASB are the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, and the Federal Reserve Board, the FRB. So they are the two federal bodies or banking bodies that oversee the bank or make sure everything's on the up and up. And then finally, you know, again, like this is a utility, but they have a bank, as you pointed out, it's about 10% of the revenue. So it's not insignificant. So that's that segment. So we've covered the utility, now the bank.
We're definitely going to come back to the bank, but I know what our listeners are going to be most interested in, and it goes to the title of the podcast, it goes to the title of your report, the uncertain future. And the big kind of variable in that is what kind of potential damages is Hawaiian Electric looking at here?
And that's, you know, that's the $64,000 question. And I just want to predicate it with saying, like, I'm not espousing a view that this is a number based on some sort of like actuarial analysis that we've done. Like, we don't have that level of sophistication here. So I'm going to just speak to some of the numbers that we're seeing out there in news reports that appear to have come from people that have kind of done that analysis. You know, so you're seeing numbers that are in the, you know, the billions. So, you know, Moody's is out saying that they feel that the worst case range could exceed Hawaiian Electric's book value, which is like $2.5 billion. So it's not a small number. And then you're seeing numbers like, you know, north of $5.5 billion being put out in some of these legal motions. And again, of course, someone's going to, you know, hit high and maybe try to come lower. That's how the nature of the legal beast works, but they're not small. And the number that we use as our base case in the report was something like $2.75 billion. And the math there is we looked at how the market cap for the company changed from the time, like kind of right up to the time before the fire to more or less today. And that number is about $2.75 billion. So you can kind of see that there's a range that's sort of tightening, you know, from it was, you know, 0 to 5 billion. So everyone seems to be coalescing around something like in the 2.75 to 3 range. And again, I'm not saying that that number is like going to be it, but just so we can speak from some point of reference, that's the numbers that we've talked about. So they're not small.
That's interesting. So, you know, a number of years ago, there was Pacific Gas and Electric, and obviously utility as well. And I'm sure people are wondering how similar or different is PG&E from Hawaiian Electric?
And you nailed it. People kind of went there right away, which I think is in this situation good because while the massive uncertainty does exist, and that's, you know, the topic, we do have something that's fairly similar to kind of look to in terms of how a legal process might work, a potential reorg process, and then just sort of going forward. So for those that weren't around for PG&E, that's Pacific Gas and Electric, I'll give a quick one on that. You know, very similar in the sense that it's a power company. This was in California. Massive wildfires, tons of damage, you know, loss of all these assets, lives, all these things. So similar in that sense. And this is where the differences start. So clearly we talked about the bank. PG&E did not have a bank. So we don't have that in the dynamic, which is strange. While the numbers in PG&E were very large, you know, $25.5 billion kind of context, on a relative basis, the damages weren't as large. So PG&E did end up filing bankruptcy. Those damages amounted to about a third of their asset value. So if you look back at the numbers that we just talked about kind of in the previous vignette, if we're looking at $2.5 to $5 billion, you compare that to what Hawaiian Electric's asset value is, it's a lot larger. So if those numbers play out, it could be a lot bigger. The other thing to think about, and this is more of an operational piece, and maybe a nuance that people miss, but PG&E was part of a larger system. They're part of, you know, this larger grid system because they're in California, right? So if something were to stop, and I'm not espousing what that is, but if, you know, as part of some resolution, they were just told to, you know, go away or something were to shut down, that grid still exists and the transmission lines are still there. So you as a consumer had a way to draw power from somewhere else. Here, you're literally locked into Hawaiian Electric. I mean, they are the provider. So that is a little different from an operational standpoint. You know, similarities, we'll talk about this a little bit too, but I think we'll get to that later, is how is this going to resolve? You know, what are the different tools that will be used? And I think a lot of what PG&E did will be used. We'll get to that in a bit. But those are the similarities and some of the main differences.
As I stated before, I wanted to come back to the bank. Does Hawaiian Electric owning a bank make their situation better or worse?
I'm not going to balk at it. It could be both. It certainly makes it more complex. So I think maybe the way to think about it is going to make it more complex for sure. So a little bit of just sort of the framework here, a bank can't file Chapter 11. So we're not necessarily saying that Hawaiian Electric will, but if we're using PG&E as kind of the playbook, kind of stands to reason that as all of these assertions are made, claims come out, you know, some sort of a Chapter 11 thing is what you'll use in order to put a framework together to address all of them. It just makes all the sense in the world. So let's just drop that into the conversation. A bank can't go bankrupt. You know, they can't go through Chapter 11. A bank holding company can. And again, the bank seems to be in really good shape. So it doesn't seem as though there's like distress there. But this is where the twist comes in. A bank cannot or should not be the source of strength for the holding company and all the other entities, right? So the bank isn't supposed to be the thing that's good while everything else is having trouble. And that's what we see. You know, we're seeing trouble with all the electrical entities. We've seen the lawsuits come out. The bank isn't named there, obviously, because they're not doing anything like that. But I think what will happen here is the regulators are going to want the bank isolated, out, you know, gone somehow. I think that's the natural solution. And I think we talked about in our report a little bit, and as I've thought about it more since, I imagine a spin out is kind of the way they're going to go. That might be, you know, a number one. And if we're playing Family Feud style, it's like, you know, 90 points out of 100 sort of thing. Selling a bank is really difficult right now, you know, given where regulatory concerns live, you know, buyers, who knows, right? Who wants to buy a bank? You know, this one seems really healthy. So I think they'll spin it out. And they actually thought about that 5-6 years ago. They were in the midst of a conversation with NextEra that ended up terminating. But part of that merger deal contemplated a spin on the bank. So I imagine, hopefully they put that plan on the bookshelf and they can just dust off the notebook and say, okay, like we're going to go that way. So they have to do that, I think. And this is another bit of sort of nuanced detail, but we have this in the report. the bank has access to a lot of capital. You know, they can go to the bank that banks them, which is the Federal Home Loan Bank of Des Moines. And that's, you know, sort of a new concept to people. There are banks that bank the banks, and it sort of goes on to infinity until you get to the federal government. But they have access to about $1.8 billion as of last quarter. The thing is, they can't use that. They can't draw that $1.8 billion down and send it to Hawaiian Electric. The OCC and the feds have the ability to say, sure, you can tap the market. Here's the capital. What are you going to do with it? And, you know, if the call goes out like, hey, we need the $1.8 billion because we need to use that to send over to HECO, and then they're going to use that to pay off some wildfire claims, like, that's not going to work. That's just not going to work. And that kind of speaks to the idea that the bank is not there to support the other company. So that's a lot of detail, I know, but I think the high point is it stands to reason that the bank will somehow find its way out of this group, you know, most likely through a spinoff. It's just the most efficient thing.
Makes sense. That leads me into my final question about potential outcomes here. What are the scenarios that you're thinking could be possible?
Yeah, happy to talk about it. I think there's a couple of elements that I want to touch on in detail. So the first one is timing. You know, you're seeing, you know, the fires occurred in August, which seems like, you know, forever ago, given how much pain people have felt. And I get it. And you're seeing lawsuits pop up. And, you know, I think people that haven't gone through restructurings are kind of like, well, what's going to happen here? It takes a little while, you know, for things to kind of coalesce around a decision. I think what's going to happen from a timing standpoint is either, you know, one of these investigations, you know, you mentioned the congressional thing, there's some lawsuits. One of those is going to come to a spot where this information is going to come out and we'll get sort of like a crux decision point. In fact, we're kind of seeing stuff come that way. The last couple of days, there have been news reports around, you know, whether a fire was or wasn't extinguished and whether something restarted or it was a new one. So it sort of seems like we're getting down to like what, you know, what the issue is going to be. I think that's going to happen pretty quickly. You know, that part is happening quickly. And I mean that in terms of like the next couple of months, perhaps. The bank adds complexity to the timing. They can't just file bankruptcy tomorrow. They need to have a plan for the bank. And that's going to take some time as well. I think that's a matter of months. So again, I think that points to sort of a later 2023 framework comes out. So that's timing. I mentioned the bank as well. I imagine, you know, as soon as all these bonds started trading down, stock starts trading down, all these headlines hit, these lawsuits hit. You know, if the OCC and the feds weren't already asking what's going on with this bank, given what's going on with all these other ones, like, they were a lot. And I imagine that there was like, you know, a direct line of communication between management and the regulators, like, daily. Like, what's the plan? What's going on? They don't want to have another debacle. And having something like that occur here would just add, you know, so much sadness, I think, just around the situation. So in some ways, those two kind of go together. So we can leave the bank and the timing, you know, spinoff plan, all that kind of thing can go along. So then what happens to the business? You know, restructuring, financial. We can look at PG&E as a great playbook. What PG&E did is they set up a trust. So they did file bankruptcy and then went into settlement discussions with all these different parties. So it's people, in this case, it would be parties that, you know, lost homes, lost loved ones. Maui is suing them. You've got Malibu is suing them. FEMA was involved in PG&E. So there's all sorts of parties that will be involved. And bankruptcy is just a great way. You know, people freak out when they hear bankruptcy, but it's just, you know, it hits a, you know, pause button. Everyone come to the same negotiation, not one person's preferenced over another. So I think it stands to reason that they'll do that. What's interesting about this one, and you saw in PG&E, is it wasn't as though, like, you know, a standard vulture-ish sort of bankruptcy where the debt takes the equity and like there's new ownership. Like, I think this one's going to be weird, as PG&E was, where it survives, the equity survives. And you kind of need it to, because you need to use that as a currency to fund a trust, something where you can provide value back to the people that are aggrieved. So PG&E ended up setting up this trust. They contributed a bunch of shares. They raised some debt that had like a long-term sort of thing. So these liability payments can be spaced out over a longer period of time. And, you know, it lives to fight another day, you know, albeit, you know, responsible for this thing. So I think that's, you know, likely to happen. And then, you know, if you talk about things that people, you know, people maybe weren't appreciating the bank, maybe didn't appreciate some of the other things. I think the operational piece going forward is one that I don't mean to be mean about, but I think, you know, if people are enraged about what's going on, I think this is the one where it's going to be really hard to stomach locally, because the only way to make this work is to raise rates. It just has to, right? You think about like, what's the source of the capital to pay the debt or whatever. There's, you know, there's no just, it just has to, right? So, and sadly for Hawaii, you know, unlike PG&E, which had this sort of larger network, like, it's kind of there. So in the end, you know, there's damages. Everyone is, you know, there's a lot of trauma there. That might be the next thing that comes back to people. And it just is. I can't figure out a way where you know, not manage that. You borrow money, you got to pay it back. And it could be like a 40-year note, something really long-term, but you got to pay it back. And that's going to come out of rates. So I think that rates go up. What will be interesting to see is if, you know, the PUC does anything, how they kind of space that out as well, because they're going to clearly have to raise more debt. does that prejudice them against doing stuff with these IPPs? Like, how do you go green? Because they're not going to be able to afford it. Like, there's a lot going on there. And that's kind of what I alluded to earlier is we got to fix the fire, but there's this momentum that was building as well. And it would be really sad to see this situation not only cause all this damage, but also, you know, stop this progression away from carbon, which they, you know, they need to do.
Yeah, it's a fascinating situation because, you know, you have the bank and you have all the complexities around Hawaiian Electric. And then in this situation, you have the culpability of the local emergency officials and what role or not did they play in exacerbating the situation, could have been extinguished sooner. I don't know how you kind of carve out liability, but it does feel like that's something different in PG&E because there is this component of there might have been negligence from the local emergency officials at work here.
I agree. And I appreciate everyone for their service. And, you know, there's been a lot going on in this country for a while. So I don't want to throw shade at the people that provide service, but I agree. I mean, some of the reports that have come out have mentioned, you know, whether it's the sirens, you know, whether it's this fire extinguishing thing. I don't know. I've never been in the trenches like that. So I don't want to, you know, Monday morning quarterback, like, hey, you guys should, like, I don't know, but like, I totally agree. And at some point that could hurt too, right? Like if it comes down to like, and you got to live together, you know, it's not like right. You just, you know, it's your community too. So it's tough.
Hey, John, thanks for a fascinating discussion and conversation on Hawaiian Electric Industries. And to our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Mimi Lowdown. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of ION Analytics or any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes and should not be considered as professional advice.